Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And all of it is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. And right now, there's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. It's not just the razors. You get the Daily Essentials Starter Set, and you can get it for just $5. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. We'll be talking more about that a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's start with what we're pretty sure is the good martini. And once again, North Korea making a major concession. We've seen a lot of that lately, from ending the war officially with South Korea to not do more nuclear testing right now. And we think they are going to agree to dismantle at this summit. Now we've got another sign that potentially good things are on the way. This is from NBC News. President Donald Trump hinted late Wednesday that three Americans detained in North Korea could soon be released as he prepares for a potential summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Quote, as everybody is aware, Trump tweeted, the past administration has long been asking for three hostages to be released from a North Korean labor camp, but to no avail. Stay tuned, unquote. Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, appeared to confirm the news Thursday morning during a Fox News appearance in which he remarked, quote, we've got Kim Jong-un impressed enough to release three prisoners today. The developments follow last week's historic meeting between Kim and South Korean President Moon Jae-in. Trump's new national security advisor, John Bolton, earlier said that releasing the Americans, Kim Hak-song, Kim Dong-chul, and Kim Song-duk, who also goes by Tony Kim, would be a demonstration of their sincerity in the lead-up to the U.S.-North Korean summit. So, Jim, either this is a very elaborate ruse or the collapse of the mountain really has put North Korea in a much different frame of mind. I mean, it was, what, a year ago that Otto Warmbier was being returned like a side of beef, and now we're getting these guys freed without much pushback, it seems, at all from North Korea.
You do not often hear me say, Greg, things like, hey, Donald Trump Jr. has a really good point, but hey, Donald Trump Jr. has a really good point. He tweeted, I think it was yesterday, wow, we've got, you know, the first, you know, release of political prisoners of Americans by North Korea in, you know, a really long time, and it's barely making a peep in the news media. Look, I realize we're in a busy news environment. We're going to be talking about some of those other topics in our later martinis, but this deserves some attention. And I think you characterized it pretty well, Greg, that, look, this is not the biggest concession that Kim Jong-un could possibly make. A bigger concession would be, you know, denuclearization with a, you know, really robust go anywhere, anytime, any place inspection regime. But then, you know, you could make the argument that this doesn't really cost him that much. This is, you know, considering how easily they can get any American citizen or anybody with dual citizenship over there, they could always take more prisoners later if they wanted to. But I think this is, you know, can be correctly interpreted as a gesture of good faith on the part of North Korea. And, you know, you throw in the lack of missile tests, the lack of additional nuclear tests, which they may or may not be able to do because they may have accidentally, you know, brought the mountain down on their facility. You add it up and it seems like they really want to come away from future, both the Trump, Kim Jong-un summit and future meetings with South Korea. They want to walk away with a happy outcome. Now, their definition of a happy outcome might be very different from ours, but they are at least willing to make these sorts of gestures, throwing us a bone to show us that they mean it. And I think, as you said, if this is a ruse, the ruse is getting more and more elaborate each week. And at some point, they start giving away or start making, you know, a significant concession. We can argue about the size of it, but my watchword for this entire process for the last couple of weeks has been cautious optimism. And I really want to, you know, underline the cautiousness, but it's fascinating to go back and read this, the early interactions between Reagan and Gorbachev, because there was a real sense that the Soviet Union was not likely to be making any significant changes back in the mid 80s to late 80s. And in fact, they ended up making very significant changes, not entirely out of their own, by their own choice, but by circumstances. And you can't help but wonder if something within North Korea has changed and they feel a need to make a more significant effort to de-escalate tensions because they just suddenly seem a lot more motivated than they were not that long ago.
Jim, if in fact the mountain caved in and their nuclear program is literally buried at this point, that would mean that they don't have a ton of leverage. So how aggressive do we get here if they're basically just begging us for either sanctions relief or not to try and depose the regime. I mean, do we go after human rights here and try to make sure that people aren't being persecuted in North Korea as well? Or do we go for denuclearization and hope that sets the stage for more down the road?
As luck would have it, Greg, I actually happened to speak to my closest and or only North Korea expert that I talked to, a guy by the name of Robert Carlin, who was very active in U.S. negotiations with North Korea going back about 30 years, worked at CIA, worked at State, was involved in the 1994 deal. I'm sure some listeners are saying, oh, that thing that worked brilliantly. But the guy's been to North Korea like 25 times. He's been to some of their nuclear facilities. This guy, you know, has interacted more with the North Koreans than almost anybody else in America. And I actually asked him about the collapsed tunnel. He says, look, there are various views about whether the nuclear test site was destroyed or just a part of it. Robert Carlin said, people he respects thinks there are other tunnels they could have used. And they might still use if a deal falls apart or if we don't, you know, the North Koreans feel like we're not holding up our end of the bargain. But he does say it's also, you know, more in keeping with North Korean practice not to throw away that card even before the negotiations begin. So by coming out and announcing, well, we're not going to do any more nuclear testing, he thinks this is adding new pages to the traditional North Korean playbook. That this is something a little, if not unprecedented, then out of character for the regime. So again, maybe it's a new type of ruse or new type of feint, or maybe something genuinely has changed within North Korea to get them to alter their priorities.
Well, we will certainly see a summit likely coming up in June. Jim, let's go to our bad martini now, and let's go to the Hannity program on the Fox News Channel. Rudy Giuliani is now one of President Trump's top lawyers in dealing with the Bob Mueller special counsel team, negotiating whether or not there will be any conversation, whether it's under oath, whether it's recorded, that sort of thing. Earlier this week, Mueller suggested he might threaten to subpoena Trump if, in fact, Trump doesn't agree to the voluntary interview. But Rudy Giuliani making some headlines on a couple different fronts last night on the Hannity program. First of all, announcing that, Michael Cohen paid Stormy Daniels $130,000 out of his own pocket. But, oh, by the way, the president reimbursed him. Oh, but that's not a violation of campaign law in any way.
That money was not campaign money. Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know. It's not campaign money. No campaign finance violation. So
they funneled it through the law firm.
Funneled through the law firm, and the president repaid it.
Oh, I didn't know he did.
Yep.
There's no campaign finance law.
Zero.
So the president.
Just like every, Sean.
So this decision,
Sean,
was made by.
Everybody was nervous about this from the very beginning. I wasn't. I knew how much money Donald Trump put into that campaign. I said, $130,000. Mm-hmm. He's going to do a couple of checks for $130,000. When I heard Cohen's retainer of $35,000 when he was doing no work for the president, I said, but that's how he's repaying. That's how he's repaying it, with a little profit and a little margin for paying taxes for Michael.
But do you know the president didn't know about this?
He didn't know about the specifics of it, as far as I know. But he did know about the general arrangement that Michael would take care of things like this, like I take care of things like this for my clients. I don't burden them with every single thing that comes along.
Oh, man, it's good to have a lawyer like that, I guess, if you're engaging in that sort of thing. One other little tidbit here, Giuliani explaining yet another version of why Jim Comey was fired as FBI director.
He fired Comey because Comey would not, among other things, say that he wasn't a target of the investigation. He's entitled to that. Hillary Clinton got that, and he couldn't get that.
Of course, the original reason was because of how he handled the Hillary investigation, and then it was other Russia-related stuff. So, Jim, a lot to chew on here. What do you make of it?
Yeah, that little, I didn't know that from Hannity in the middle of the interview there. This is why you don't stick your neck out too far to insist the president wasn't lying about anything. And I wonder how many times in the last couple of years Hannity's been in that situation where absolutely under no circumstances did the president do X. Oh, he did. Oh, I'm sorry. No, he did do X. That's what I meant to say from the beginning. Look, this would not be as huge a deal if a couple of weeks ago the president had not been on Air Force One, had been asked directly, did you know about Cohen's payment of $130,000 to Stormy Daniels? And the president said no. And now Giuliani's saying, well, he may not have known all the details, but he knew the gist. Yeah. Ideally, your lawyer would not come out and say, yeah, my client lied to the public about this. We're at a point where, you know, whenever this topic comes up, a lot of the reaction is, oh, look, we don't care about this stuff. We don't care about Trump's sex life, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, fine. By the way, I don't think the $130,000 payment and all this stuff was meant to keep the story suppressed for purposes of the election. I think it's very safe to say that after the Access Hollywood tape, all of the other various scandals and outrageous behavior that had surrounded the president, I don't know about you, Greg. I think this was all really well priced in Trump's public reputation and how the electorate saw him. I don't think this was going to make a huge impact in the election. I do think it might have caused great stress for President Trump at home with Melania, and that may have been what made it worth $130,000 to him to ensure that Stormy Daniels did not decide to start telling her story to anyone who would listen. The thing that I'd be curious about is if you really want to say this is no big deal. I don't care about Trump's sex life. Fine. All right. If you want to say, I don't care if he has non-disclosure agreements and, you know, all kinds of secret payments to the women he sleeps with, you say you don't care about, fine. I would be curious about whether you felt the same way back in 1998, because we Republicans did used to think that was a big deal. We used to, you know, and even beyond that, if you want to say, if you want to say, oh, it's the president's business, he's free to lie to us about his secret payments to women. Well, that's not what our perspective was back in 1998 either. And yeah, we can laugh at Democrats and their double standard on this, right? They said this was no big deal back in 1998. And now they're saying this is a very big deal. And or I'm sure somebody out there is probably arguing this is grounds for impeachment here in 2018. I think a bigger question is, what do you think the standard ought to be? Greg, call me crazy. I'd rather the president didn't lie to me. I would rather if the answer is X, I would prefer the president said the answer is X, not the answer is Y. And I think that's, you know, this is any way you want to slice it. The other thing is that, again, the president has already changed 2/3 of his legal team from just a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if Rudy's out the door, but if there's a sense that Rudy is freelancing, or you got to wonder, did he check with Trump and everybody else before he went on Hannity and decided he was going to announce this? I mean, it's conceivable that this is some sort of strategy that they're going to have to admit this at some point. So you do it, you know, now, and in 2 weeks, there's a whole lot of shouting. And at some point down the road, this feels like old news and you get it past it. I don't know if that's what's going on here. I think it just seems a matter of Rudy felt like this was the best way to handle this. And I think that's an open question, you know, about whether he's made the president's life easier or harder with his statements on Hannity last night.
The whole thing stinks. There's not suborning perjury here. There's not necessarily obstruction of justice. We don't seem to think that Mueller's got a lot to go on there yet. The investigation obviously goes on. But the whole thing obviously stinks from a lot of different perspectives. And but because the scandal stinks, because the story stinks, Jim doesn't mean we need to, or our lovely listeners. And that's where Dollar Shave Club comes in, because they're not just about razors, although their razors are fantastic. We can attest to that, along with the Dr. Carver Shave Butter. But they have a whole array of toiletries that can help you feel better, smell better, feel fresher in the shower, lotions and shampoos, and toothpaste, all sorts of other things that you can use to make yourself ready to go in the morning and not offend that person on the metro or that person wherever you are sitting next to you at work. Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. And right now, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to get ready in the bathroom, much more than razors. And the best part, as I just mentioned, they deliver it all to you.
Yeah, don't let the name fool you. They are much more than just razors. They deliver everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. Now, you name it, whether it's shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, something to go with that nice little quip toothbrush you have, hair gel, even a wipe that will make your rear feel tingly clean. I'm a big fan of their Amber and Lavender Calming Body Cleanser. I've never smelled anything like it. Now, good luck finding a product as good as this in the store. All of Dollar Shave Club's products are made with top shelf ingredients that won't break your budget. You will feel the difference, and shipping is free with your membership.
And here is a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products for a very low price. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essentials Starter Set. It comes with the body cleanser, The One Wipe Charlies, yes, those are the amazing butt wipes that we've talked about for many times, many months. Their world-famous shave butter and their best razor. That's the six-blade executive. Keep the blades coming for just a few more bucks a month and add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need. And you can check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim. Going to need a shower after this one, too. So get your Dollar Shave Club products ready to cleanse yourself from our crazy martini. Now, the Washington Redskins, you and I are not fans of this team, and there's a lot of good reasons for that. One of them is their owner, and their owner has apparently been doing things far beyond what we've already been critical of him for. Now the New York Times is exposing what could be considered extremely shameful and perhaps beyond that treatment of the cheerleaders. This is part of the story, as Jim reports in the Morning Jolt today. When the Washington Redskins took their cheerleading squad to Costa Rica in 2013 for a calendar photo shoot, the first cause for concern among the cheerleaders came when Redskins officials collected their passports upon arrival at the resort, depriving them of their official identification. Down further in the story, it says, for the photo shoot at the adults-only Occidental Grand Papagayo Resort on Culebra Bay, some of the cheerleaders said they were required to be topless, though the photographs used for the calendar would not show nudity. Others wore nothing but body paint. Given the resort's secluded setting, such revealing poses would not have been a concern for the women, except that the Redskins had invited spectators. A contingent of sponsors and FedEx Field suite holders, all men, were granted up-close access to the photo shoots. One evening, at the end of a 14-hour day that included posing and dance practices, the squad's director told 9 of the 36 cheerleaders that their work was not done. They had a special assignment for the night. Some of the male sponsors had picked them to be personal escorts at a nightclub. And Jim, the story goes on to point out that there was no sex involved, but these women obviously felt uncomfortable being assigned to this. They certainly felt like it was required. Throw in the passports and the leering spectators. You're seeing some folks on Twitter saying, well, you know, they dress the way they dress to impress men as cheerleaders, so what's the big deal here? But when you put it all together, this is a really sleazy story for the Redskins front office.
I was going to say, the first thing that jumps out at me, Greg, is the taking away of the passports upon arrival in a foreign country.
Yep.
Greg, as you and I know, that's what sex traffickers do, guys. Okay, that's not, you know, sorry, just helpful tip to all of our listeners. I assume you knew this already, but if you go anywhere with anyone, to a foreign country, and upon your arrival in that country that is not the United States of America, I'm assuming you're a U.S. citizen as you're listening to this, and they say, oh, let me hold on to your passport for you. You say no, because otherwise you can't get out of the country. You are trapped there, or you got to go to the U.S. embassy, apply, and there are various, you know, rigmarole ways to work around this. But like this, that's some shady stuff there, right? If somebody wants to take away your ability to leave the country, that should set off, you know, warning bells and alarm bells and all that stuff. Look, as far as we know, nothing in this story indicates that the Washington Redskins cheerleaders were literally pimped out in a prostitution form for this. But it got into a gray area. And by gray, I mean charcoal. This really, like, what kind of a business are you exactly running here, Washington Redskins? Who thought this was a good idea? You want to do the photo shoot, fine. You want to do the calendar, fine. You know, all that stuff with this, you know, I guess you could say it's kind of par for the course for cheerleaders in the modern NFL. But the idea of inviting wealthy suite owners and stuff like that to just ogle the women during the photo, this comes off a very creepy thing. The Washington Redskins, the New York, this was a story in the New York Times. They said they have 5 cheerleaders. I have a very hard time believing that they, you know, made up the story. The other thing which is worth noting is the Redskins statement was really just a masterpiece of not addressing the issue. You know, the Redskins cheerleader program is one of the NFL's premier teams in participation, professionalism, and community service. Each Redskin cheerleader is contractually protected to ensure a safe and constructive environment. The work of our cheerleaders do in the community, visiting our troops abroad, and supporting our team in the field is something the Redskins organization and our fans take great pride in. What's missing from all that, Greg?
Any comment on the actual allegations?
Exactly. You'd like to think that if it didn't happen, oh, hey, this didn't happen, would have made its way into the statement somehow. And when you don't put that into a statement, I interpret that as an, okay, this did actually happen. Now, for what it's, you know, the question now is, so whose idea was this? Who signed off on this? Who authorized? The article mentions two team officials traveled with the cheerleaders for this. You know, who knew about it? How did anybody react? The fact that this only happened once and the fact that this happened, I guess, about 5 years ago, says to me somebody in the organization had enough good sense to realize, oh, this is bad. We don't want to do this anymore. Now, the other kind of aspect that I find, first of all, two aspects that I think, first of all, I think is going to be a huge story in the next couple of days. Although when I was listening to sports radio locally earlier today, Greg, I was not hearing a huge talk about this. I didn't get a chance to see where the story ran in the Washington Post today. You figure this would be a huge Washington story, particularly for the Washington sports media, because, you know, for those listeners outside the D.C. area, my God, you have no idea how obsessive local media is about the Redskins. They will tell you about the running back's hamstring before they tell you about an ongoing terrorist attack downtown. That's, you know, and the idea that, you know, this obsessive coverage of the team, nobody ever heard about this. Nobody heard a whiff about this. There's a lot of egg on the face of the Washington Post today. As somebody on Twitter said to me, Greg, I guess it's not just democracy that dies in darkness. you know, Washington Times, you know, I don't know, Washington Examiner isn't really that focused on sports coverage, but, you know, WTEM, all the local networks have their own little, you know, Redskins focused sports shows on the weekends. And all these are presumably done with cooperation of the team. And you can't help but wonder, is there a certain, I don't know, do you cover the team a little bit less, or, you know, are you less interested in investigating a potentially scandalous story about this if you have these extensive partnerships with the team? You know, I don't know any of that yet. But again, I think it's an embarrassing day for Washington media that the New York, a New York institution comes into their backyard and blows up this huge story. The other thing is, you got to wonder, does the NFL want to get rid of owner Dan Snyder? Now, Dan Snyder was the owner of the Redskins, was not on this trip, at least as the article says. Nobody's, at least there's nothing in the article indicating that he definitely knew about it, approved it, signed off on it. A little bit of discussion about how the Redskins cheerleaders have been wearing less and less each year of his tenure, it seems. But look, for a lot of reasons, Dan Snyder is a really hated man in the Washington area for a variety of reasons. You can't help but get the feeling that there are a lot of people who'd like to see Dan Snyder replaced as owner of the Redskins. They'd like to force him to sell. Oh, by the way, the owner of the Carolina Panthers had to sell the team after his own version of a Me Too harassment scandal. So, you know, could this eventually start a series of dominoes that leads to a new owner of the Redskins? You know, way too early to say. But I think this is a probably one of the more crazier, creepier, and more disturbing stories I've heard in the world of professional sports. And let's face it, Greg, they got a lot of competition in this. And it just, my feeling is that people are going to be, you know, this is going to spur really, you know, tough questions about why do we have cheerleaders? And if a little bit of cheesecakey poses or something like that is okay, when does the objectification of cheerleaders turn into something really disturbing that, you know, right-thinking football fans would not want to be associated with? Wherever that line is, the Redskins went way past it in this trip a couple of years ago.
Oh, even before this story came out, there were columnists, I think, over at USA Today saying it was time to put an end to cheerleaders in the NFL because they're only there to be objectified. So I'm sure this will only add fuel to that fire. And to the point where you made about the Washington media, this is not a joke. Not only did they do their own mock drafts ahead of stories of the hockey and the basketball team being in the playoffs a few weeks ago, up until a few days ago, just before the draft, teams knew who they'd be playing and where, but didn't know the exact schedule. They spent time doing a mock schedule and how they thought it would turn out before they talked about the other teams that were already in the playoffs. So just a little insight on where the media is when it comes to the Redskins.
Greg, I thought for a moment you were going to say they made up a mock draft. I was going to say, yeah, God, what weirdos. Those guys. But you're right. The just absolute depth of red. And then, but that, you know, it's not like we're blaming the Redskins for their popularity. We're just kind of observing that the level of interest in the, you know, for all of the resources. Look, you know, news organizations have a limited number of resources. Sports departments are very rarely the crown jewel of a news organization. So of those limited resources you get, a lot get devoted to the Redskins. but none of them are into actually, you know, a story that might actual news, right? It's much more, you know, who do we think they're going to draft or something like that. So anyway, we'll see how this shakes out. But my feeling is that I think this is going to be, you know, National Football League has had plenty of problems lately. I think this one is going to get a great deal of criticism for all across a wide spectrum of society.
Well, not only that, I have to wonder whether other cheerleading squads are going to start coming out with their own stories, and we'll see if it snowballs from here. But, you know, it makes sense that the Redskins get wall-to-wall coverage because, you know, they've won one playoff game this century.
I just want to point out, here's the other thing, other aspect of people like, boy, Greg and Jim are spending a lot of time on this topic. Look, I don't know about you, Greg, but I'm a little tired of hearing the Jets referred to as the dumpster fire and the worst franchise in the NFL. Oh, really? We're not running international prostitution rings, okay, Redskins fans? All right? Knock it off. We're talking actual dumpster fire franchises. I think the Redskins have just rocketed to the top of the list.
Jim, you are off tomorrow, which is sad because it's May the 4th. I hope you are celebrating accordingly as you head off to the NRA meeting.
I'll be picking up blasters down in Dallas.
Enjoy. Have a good trip. We'll see you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please visit our friends over at Dollar Shave Club. Pick up all of their great products, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. And tune in again Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.